Good morning, Mosaic. It is so great to be with you today on this very special day that we are celebrating 20 years of the life of this church and all that God has done and is doing through this body. Some of you may not know me. My name is Brooke, and I am Renaud's wife.
She is indeed.
She is indeed. This is his very comfortable space and my not-so-comfortable space, but I am very happy to get to be here today. About a month ago, as the teams were busy preparing for this day, I, at home, said, Renaud, you know, I'd really love to be a part of the planning and maybe give some input into how this is all going to turn out. And little did I know that that would mean that I would be here. So I'm going to do my best. And I am super excited to share with you about these 20 years in the life of this church.
Indeed. And what a joy it is to be able to be here with Brooke and with you guys as we celebrate God's incredible faithfulness, not just to our church here, but to his church throughout the generations and throughout the globe. As you guys know, if you've been around for the last couple of weeks, we are on a journey toward Easter, where we are traveling through the extraordinary beauty of God coming to be with us and constantly coming to us, not demanding that we come to him. We are next week going to enter into this beautiful reality where John looks up in Revelation 21 and sees a new heaven and a new earth and the new Jerusalem coming together. And we see God saying, I'm going to be your God and you're going to be my people. And what we've discovered over the last few weeks is that God intended from the very beginning for creation to be integrated, our domain, earth, and his domain, heaven, to be fully integrated and for him to move with us seamlessly into one another's lives. And because of the disruption that occurred when our ancestors, Adam and Eve, chose to rule on their own, to eat of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil and to disobey God, and sin entered in, we have seen a separation, a disruption of that. And yet, what have we discovered? That instead of God abandoning us to our own inevitable deaths, he has been showing up ever since, progressively closer and closer to us to remind us that he is our God, but also our Redeemer and Rescuer. And so we traveled through the tabernacle and him residing with us in the tabernacle with his people as they traveled. And then the temple, as it became a more profound and full space, but yet still restrictive. And then God residing in his new temple, Jesus, as he became flesh and blood and dwelt among us and made himself accessible to us in ways we cannot possibly imagine, and lived and died and rose from the dead to redeem our stories. And then, as Brady shared last week, for him to actually say, Jesus, it is better for me to leave because the one I'm sending is going to come reside with you closer than your breath. And that God would say the Spirit of God is going to come and dwell in us so that we, our bodies, become the temple of God. What a thing. And that God is now in us. And as Brady so eloquently put it last week, this entire movement of God entering back into the domain of earth where sin and death reigns is him slowly unraveling sin and death and shoving hell backwards where it belongs when it's nothing. And so Brady said it well, God, would you transform the hell out of me, right? Like literally take wherever hell reigns, wherever hell has dominion on this earth or in me, and make it go away. And that is what the Spirit of God is doing in us and for us. But as we will discover, he is also doing that through us so that it's not just in us that he is transforming us, but it is also through us that he is transforming the world. And this is what we get to be a part of. And today, as we travel through the story that God has written for us in these short 20 years, what we hope, what we want you to notice, what we see and what we notice is not a story about a church and its awesomeness, but a story about a God and his faithfulness. And as he has been faithful to our church here, it is a microcosm of his faithfulness to his global and generational church for thousands of years. And we kind of get to celebrate his faithfulness to the whole as we catch a glimpse of his faithfulness to our little story that is part of his giant story. So this story that is ours, that we're celebrating 20 years today, began with a dream that God stirred in Brooke and my hearts in Monterey, California, when we lived there, of a church that we might be part of starting, a church where we would exalt Christ and make him awesome and obsess about exalting him, and that he would draw whomever he sees fit to himself. That we would not spend ourselves trying to figure out how to draw people. We would spend ourselves trying to figure out how to make him bigger, more awesome, more beautiful. A church that the people in the church would work and learn to love each other. Because if we can't do life together and love each other in the ups and the downs, they won't even know we follow Jesus. Because Jesus said, they will know you follow me by your love for each other. So we wanted a church that would work at loving each other, confessing our sins to each other, knowing the mess that is each other, and yet still engaging and praying with each other, even as we hurt each other and we live together. And then a church that would demonstrate our passion for God and his passion for people. Not talk about it, not think about it, not pray about it. Do it. Do it. Actually do things that the world would look at and say, wow, that was an active demonstration of your love for me, to which we can say it's an active demonstration of our love for God and his love for you. And we dreamed about what a place like that would look like. And then as that dream emerged, God began a journey to bring that dream into fruition.
It is so overwhelming and amazing to stand here today and to think about all that God has done. Literally tens of thousands of people have experienced God and the love of Jesus Christ through this church locally, nationally, and globally. Today, there will be thousands of people that come to be part of our services that will get to hear about the gospel of Jesus in every single week. Thousands of kids all across the globe and right here in Orlando have been cared for, vulnerable children, because of the ministry of this church. And every single year, hundreds of thousands of dollars go out from this place, money that each and every one of us that are part of this body give here, that then goes back out to support partners all over the world. It is truly a miracle and amazing and awe-inspiring to think of all that God is up to.
So the question really is, how on earth did we get from a dream in California to where we stand today, where all of this and more is true? That is the story of God's faithfulness.
So I'm going to jump in and kind of tell you a little bit of the story. So long before we even knew that we were going to plant a church here in Orlando, Florida, God knew, right? Of course, God knows it all and was already making a way for this church to become a reality. So long before I met Renaud, long before I even was in a relationship with Jesus, before I was a believer, I was growing up in Northern Virginia in a family with my sister and my two parents. And my sister, we lived a simple life, good life, simple life. My parents were very wise, and they made the decision when I was a child to start investing for my college, like many parents do. And they invested in this company, little company called Microsoft and some others like it. And so my college was paid for, as well as my sister's college. But just God's plan and hand in all of it. Because of their investment, there was extra money. And so when Renaud and I moved to California, we lived in Monterey, extremely, extremely expensive housing market. And on a youth pastor's salary, we were able to put a down payment on a house in Monterey, California, our first house that we owned. And again, long before we even thought that we would be coming here, we thought we'd be in California for a long time. That house in 3 years doubled in value. And so when we sold that house, the profits from the sale of that house became the seed money that enabled us to be able to come here, lease space, pay our salary, you know, so we could live. And just God's incredible hand, starting back decades and decades before I even knew Jesus, before we even met, that this church would be able to become a reality.
Isn't it quite something to sit here and to think to yourself that we are here today and we get to be part of God's work in this place and through this place, and that God was thinking about us before Brooke knew Jesus. Like, isn't that a mind-blowing thing? That God was working out circumstances that would ultimately translate into providing for Brooke and I the resources we would need in those early years to be able to engage in being able to fulfill the call that God was calling us and to survive here without a church because we were starting one. I just find it amazing that before we knew we would need provision, God was already providing for what he knew was to come. And it just gives you such a sense of confidence about what the future might hold, that he is even now doing things you do not know and I do not know about, things you do not know about and I do not know about, that he already knows and is already doing. And the entire story that you will hear is going to be God consistently doing ahead of time the things we would need before we knew we would need them. And this is one of the very best examples. So God's provision came to us.
So with the sale of our house in Monterey, it was the summer of 2002, and we had one daughter, Hadley, she was 2 at the time, and a newborn son, Cullen. You can see that picture of us. I kind of look the same. I'm not quite so sure about her now.
I do not look the same. That is me in the picture, FYI. And yes, we moved here with the 5-week-old.
Yes
we did.
So we packed up our family, our 2 cats, and we headed to Claremont, Florida. We were able to buy a home in a new community off of 27 in Claremont, and we moved here in the early fall, I think it was September of 2002. The first person we met upon moving to Florida was a woman named Jackie Farley. She was our neighbor. There was 4 lots separating our house and her house. She came over with a loaf of banana bread, and Jackie has been part of our story ever since. She actually serves here. She's on our staff. She runs our care and prayer ministry. And that same year, we met people at our swimming pool, just at Target, but there was no Target, at the grocery store, the Publix and Kings Ridge, just meeting people, getting to know people, telling them, hey, we'd love to get together. You want to meet for coffee? You want to come over for lunch? And just building relationships. We met Brittany and her family. Brittany is now on staff as well as her husband. They were dating at the time. They were in high school when we met them. And now they have 2 beautiful children, and both of them serve on our staff. And it's just been incredible to see how God, early on, just some of those beginning relationships have sustained, and how those amazing people are part of our story. And just God providing, once again, making connections, getting us into a place where we can meet people and begin to build this body.
And so God continues to move ahead of us and do things we didn't know. So we started our first journey in a clubhouse in the Legends neighborhood off of Highway 27, because that's where we lived. And we were having some vision events before our launch of Easter 2003. And we had a plan to meet in the Legends clubhouse for church for a year. We talked about them to lease the space and do that. And it was all sorted out. So we were thrilled. We had our starting point. And a month before that Easter, we got word from the Legends Clubhouse that a person in the neighborhood didn't like that a church was going to be in there, and they changed the bylaws and we couldn't meet there anymore. So now we're a month away from our launch, everything's in place, and we have nowhere to meet. And so our next vision event actually happened in our living room with a few people that showed up there. But we were also like, God, are we going to do church in our living room? Which was fine. It turns out God was already at work before we knew he was. Brooke was a fitness instructor before we moved here. She started in Virginia and then continued in California. So when we came here, she got a job at the National Training Center and at the Lord's Gym. The Lord's Gym in Claremont was owned by Dr. Paul Sorge, who loves Jesus. And we were chatting. She knew him and shared our dilemma. And he said, oh, you can use our aerobics room and meet in that for church because we're closed on Sundays. So our launch of Mosaic Church officially was on Easter Sunday of 2003. And we met in an aerobics room, which was awesome because there were probably only about 20 of us there, if that. And because there were mirrors all around the room, when we were worshiping there, it felt like there were 150 people in the room. Legitimate. I'm not even kidding. You were just like, oh my gosh, there's all these people. And you're like, it's just reflections. It's just reflections. But God was so gracious to us to even then be preparing the way. And we then, as we continue to meet in that aerobics room for a season, we were looking to find our home, asking God to provide for us a home where we could get some permanency and some stability and start inviting the community to be part of this story of a church that demonstrates its passion for God and his passion for people. And we found a little warehouse on Highway 27 in Mineola that we could lease. And we went in and renovated a couple of small things. We were a teeny tiny little church, and we started meeting in this warehouse, and it started forming into the place that was home. And as we began to meet in this warehouse, we began to put our energy and effort into taking this little band of people that we had and starting to work at the things God had laid on our heart in the dream. We need to make sure we exalt Jesus. We need to make sure we learn to love each other well. And we need to serve the community so that they know we are here to serve them and they are not here to serve us. We want to serve at the cost of surviving and not survive at the cost of serving. And so we jumped into those things.
This all played out in really tangible ways. We just wanted to start doing life together with the people that God was building relationships with in us. And so we started having people to our house all the time. For about seven years, every Sunday night. So we had Sunday night church. We didn't do Sunday morning church for those first few years. Every Sunday night after church, we'd invite a group of people over, maybe 20, 30 people, and we would watch Alias for the first few seasons.
Five of you just remembered that. Alias! Oh, yeah!
And then after Alias ended, after a few seasons, we switched to Lost. And it was just a way to have people over and fellowship, get to know people. People set up pack and plays in our guest bedroom and brick their little babies in there, and it was kind of crazy. We'd meet at the parks for play days. We had Bible studies in each other's homes. Just doing life, showing up at each other's at the hospital when people would have babies, someone's birthday parties, holidays. None of our family lived here. And so every holiday, we were just like, who else doesn't have family? Come to our house. We'll go to your house. It was just really building this family of we do life together. We serve together. We follow Jesus together. We show up for each other when we need each other. And that was amazing, amazing few years of just these relationships strengthening and deepening, learning how to love each other. We also wanted to love the community. We were this teeny little group of people, and so we were like, how can we get involved? What can we do in this community? So at the time, Claremont was still pretty small. The Target wasn't even there yet. The Home Depot wasn't there, none of that. And they used to have this event called First Fridays, the first Friday of every month. And they'd close down the streets and set up little booths and whatnot. And so we set up a booth every month for years. We'd do face painting, crafts for the kids, hand out free food, of course, because, you know, we love to hand out food. So, and they used to have they actually still have a parade. But back then, there was a Christmas parade every December, and we would orange bags. As an engineer designed a float for us, we'd build this, had this whole team of people that would build a float. We'd show up and dancers and throw candy just to be part, just the people would be like, oh, this church mosaic. Oh, yeah, I've seen them. Oh, yeah, they seem pretty fun. And little by little, our little community grew.
And so our heart behind all of that was not to engage so that people would come to us, but for us to go to them and have no agenda but to say we're here to serve. And so in doing that, it was an incredible journey. And yet, as this journey was unfolding, that we started being able to experience what it was like to be the kind of church we wanted to be, there were also some practicalities that were challenging. When a church is super duper small, then the resources are super duper small as well. And we had a savings account that had come out of the sale of that house in California. And we had a few people that were sending little bits and pieces to help us here and there. But we did not have enough resources to sustain if the church didn't get to a point where the people that were part of it would be able to resource it enough to be sustainable. So there were different times where I would start wondering and asking the question, did we make the right decision to come here? Is this going to work? You know that most churches that plant don't survive. They don't survive the first year. They don't survive the first 5 years. That's just a reality. So we knew that that was a reality and a possibility. And it started becoming obvious that we might be one of those stories because it was great, but it was also not sustainable. And I remember one particular week. It was a tough week. We were trying to figure out how to pay certain things and everything was dwindling. And I just sort of, it dawned on me. I'm like, I don't think this works, you know? And I was rolling into Claremont to go to the post office to go pick up the mail. And I grabbed the mail and I pulled everything out. And one of the envelopes was from a woman named Penny. She was a friend of my parents. We had gone to some people in Virginia and California and shared the vision with them before we moved here. And a few of them decided to participate financially with us. And Penny had started from day one faithfully sending a check every single month. It just showed up in that post office, stamp on it, addressed in the post office. So I opened this up, I opened the check up, and it was the same every month. She was sending a $10 check every single month. And I remember as I opened the check up, you know, a $10 check buys you a coffee meeting. Today it buys you a cup of coffee, but back then it bought you a coffee meeting. And I remember opening it up and thinking to myself, this is part of the challenge, right? That we don't have enough coming in to make all this work, because the people that you've called to do this, they don't have as much as we need. And it was one of those few times in life where the Spirit of God spoke internally so loudly that I would argue it was an audible voice. And the Spirit of God said to me, I moved in Penny's heart to cause her to believe in this vision that I am affecting. And until she stops sending $10 a month, you keep going. And it was an incredible moment for me, because God used that moment to create clarity and courage and perseverance in me that would become necessary for us to walk through the next few seasons until things started changing. And I will tell you, without a shadow of a doubt, if it were not for the faithfulness of that woman and that check month over month for those first few years, we would not be here today. That is a real thing, because I was ready to roll out and throw in the towel. And God used the faithfulness of a person and that which they could give in obedience to absolutely set the trajectory for the way that we would live life as a church. And it was incredible to watch God's provision through Penny. And actually, Penny this weekend is with us. She's going to be with us at one of the gatherings. And this will be the first time she gets to see what the fruit of that faithfulness looks like in this and all that we get to do. This is the power of God using each of us in the way that we are obedient and able to be used.
So this began a journey that we could not have imagined. It was a challenging few years because we did not, we kind of became nomads. So we had this warehouse up on 27. You said that, right? So we had this warehouse up on 27 in Mineola. That was our first kind of home after the Lord's gym. We were growing a little bit. We were maybe, I don't know the numbers, but we were growing a little bit. We were doing some renovations to move from the front of the warehouse to the back of the warehouse so we could have a few more seats. And we called in an inspector from the city of Claremont. So this Claremont's just beginning to kind of grow a little bit. And they came in and they were like, well, your electrical looks fine, but there's only one bathroom. And you need two bathrooms for a church. And so he shut us down on Tuesday afternoon. And we're like, okay, what do we do now? And so totally, once again, God just working and working even before we knew that we needed him to work. Weeks before that event happened, Renaud had agreed to play in a golf tournament, you know, one of those fundraiser things. And that Friday afternoon, Friday after the Tuesday, when the inspector came, he was in a foursome. And one of the other foursome members was the worship pastor at Real Life Christian Church. As Renaud was sharing kind of our dilemma and like, oh goodness, what are we going to do? He wasn't asking for help, just kind of sharing like, oh, this is what's going on with our church. What's going on with your church? That worship pastor reached out to the lead pastor, Justin Miller, and they allowed us to use their church on Sunday nights because they were meeting Sunday mornings. They had space. And so we thought we'd be going there just for a few months and kind of till we figured out what our next steps would be. We ended up staying at Real Life for almost 2 years. That church opened their doors to us and allowed us to meet in their church. So amazing how the body of Christ stepped up to help us. And totally incredible. After about a year or so, we're like, okay, well, we don't want to overstay our welcome. What are we going to do? We had found a warehouse, another warehouse, over by the Citrus Tower. And we leased that warehouse. We were doing some renovations there as well. And just a crazy time of... Where's our home? Looking for home, trying to find our home. And I'll let Renaud continue what happens with that warehouse.
We have the second warehouse, and we're so excited, and Real Life is so excited because it was supposed to be a Sunday evening and then supposed to be a few weeks and then supposed to be a few months, and now we're a year and a half into our stay, and they're growing as well, and they're like, we love you, but let's help you find a home. So we find a warehouse, and we begin the process of renovating the warehouse. We had about 60 people in the church at the time, and we had about $25,000 in the bank, and so we're like, okay, we're gonna cut corners and do things, but we're gonna make it happen. And Claremont was just just starting to really grow then. And with Claremont's growth also came changes in the codes. And for those of you that build, you know when codes change, things change. And so as we are renovating this little warehouse and we'd figured out how to do it for under $25,000 to have it ready for church, as Claremont's world came in there, they're like, hold on, you got to live up to code on all these new codes. And it turned out to do that, it would cost us north of $100,000 to make that happen. So we immediately knew that again, this warehouse that God had seemingly provided was falling through. And you know, when life happens and you're excited about something and then it doesn't work, you're trying to figure out, is this the enemy? Is this us? Is it God? God, what's going on? And once again, God was already doing what was necessary for us before we knew it would be necessary. There was another pastor in town, Rick Van Wagner. He was the pastor of Family Christian Center. And I had built relationship with him because he was one of the first pastors when we moved here to say, we're thrilled to have you in town, thrilled that you're planting a church. And so I was hanging out with him actually during that same month and said, man, we got to get out of real life because they need us out. Now we don't have a home again. We don't know what to do. And he said, we have a bunch of pods on our property that we use. You have a small, teeny, tiny little church. You're welcome to use one of our pods. And so they set it up for us. And suddenly we transitioned from meeting at Real Life Christian Church to meeting at Family Christian Church. Just the way the churches in this community came alongside this fledgling church plant, just helping us along. And yet we were in this position of not having a home because now the warehouse was off the table. And here we are meeting in another church in their little temporary pod. And I was in the process of doing that. A couple months had passed by and Rick Van Wagner calls me and he says, hey, you got to swing by my office. I've got something to share with you. I come by his office and Rick says to me, I've just found out about a building in Oakland, Florida. And I was like, where is Oakland, Florida? Because I love you, Oakland. You are incredible. And I love you now that I know that you exist. But you are in between Claremont and Winter Garden and we drive 50. So it just, and so I'm like, where is Oakland? He's like, it's actually just a couple miles from here between, I'm like, really? And he's like, yep. And he said, this church is selling this building. It's not on the market yet, but I have some inside relationships. They're going to ask $2.7 million for the building, but if you offer $1.9 million, they'll give it to you. Isn't that exciting? Aren't you excited? I'm excited. Like, great. We're a church of 60-ish people. We have $20,000 in the bank. No bank is going to touch us. And he says, offer them $1.9. I'm like, okay. And for whatever reason, God began to stir in me and in our elders, hey, let's just swing by and take a look at the place. I mean, may as well, right? And we go look at this building. We're in the parking lot. And we're like, man, wouldn't it be great to have this? I mean, amazing. And so we leave. And I still to this day do not know why I did this. But I got home and I thought, I'm going to call the pastor of that church and just say, just out of curiosity, if we offered you $1.9 million, would you take it? I mean, we had $25,000 in the bank. It's a hypothetical. I'm not going to tell him that. I'm just going to ask the question. So I call and I ask the question. He says, let me get back to you. And he talks to the, and he calls me back and he says, I tell you what, we talked about it. And if you can put $1 million down in cash, we will actually carry the other 900 for a season and we will sell you the building. All we need is $1 million in cash. And I'm like, well, there it is. There it is. That's all we need. And so in order to get that building, it would take a
miracle.
So that same week, no kidding, that same week, I get on a phone call with a family that we knew that didn't live here. And it was just a phone call touching base and checking in. And we're talking and they had started some businesses or a business and they had gotten a few really large contracts. And so they just asked, hey, is there anything that you might need? And I remember just jokingly on the phone saying, well, we could use $1 million in cash. And their answer was, I think we can do that. And that week, they wired $1 million as a gift into our account, not as a loan. And it just came our way. So we're just sitting there going, what on earth just happened? And within 28 days of that first phone call, we closed on that building and that building became our new home. And here's what's crazy. had the warehouse on 27 at Citrus Tower worked out, and had Claremont not shut it down because of codes, we would never have ended up at Family Christian Center, which means we would never have ended up in Rick Van Wagner's office, which means we would never have known of that building, which means this miracle would never have happened, and we would probably still be in a warehouse in Claremont by the Citrus Tower. And yet God was moving before we knew we would need moving. And so we found ourselves moving into our new home in Oakland, Florida. One miracle taking place to get us there, and lots of miracles to come.
So even though God used the generosity of one family to get us into this building and make it possible for us to have a permanent home, this church was not really our style. And so we had, from the day that that church moved out, they rented it back for a few months. Before the day that they moved out until the day we had our first service, there was 1 week in between. It was Memorial Day 2006. That weekend was our first Sunday service. And so our little band of brothers and sisters came together, and for 1 week, we essentially moved in to that 5-acre parcel in Oakland. And we worked our tails off day in and day out. I don't really even know if my kids ate that week. They are alive still. That's all I know. Okay. Someone fed them. It wasn't me. I was pregnant with our fourth child. Hope was already born. I was pregnant with Cole at the time. And it was just an incredible week. Probably one of the most exhausting weeks of my life, but also the most exhilarating to see the body of Christ come together. And whether it was put out mulch, plant flowers, paint walls, set up our first, not last, coffee bar, and just day in and day out, this incredible community of 50, 60 of us working to make this church our home, our DNA, our style, so that we could say, here we are, we're ready for the community to experience us. We also made the decision for that first Sunday, this seemed brilliant at the time, in hindsight, maybe not so much, that we had always been meeting at Sunday nights, that we're going to now do a Sunday morning service as well. So that first Sunday, on top of this whole crazy week of working, we did two services. And in between, why not throw an event for the community as well? And so we pulled off that summer three events. That first Sunday, one each month, we had water slides. We had those rock wall things that you climb. Just everything you can imagine for the kids, for families, food, raffles, everything free, no cost to the community. Just to say, we love you, we're here, we want you to know that we're here to serve you. And it was an incredible beginning of a story of us learning how to do life together, learning how to serve together, learning how to show up for the community that has stuck and is still to this day a core part of our DNA.
So our heart, same as it was before, we wanted to serve the community without any agenda. So all those events we did, we paid for them. We told people, leave your wallets at home. And at the end of the event, we didn't hand out cards inviting them to church, because we were like, we're actually not doing this for any reason other than to say to you, Oakland, we love you. Winter Garden, we love you. Claremont, we love you. Mineola, we love you. Come and have some fun. And so during that summer, things started growing. We were also doing these two services, a morning and an evening service. And we had asked the people that were originally part of the church to go to both, because it would be a little odd, wouldn't it, if all of our people were coming Sunday night like they were, and then all the new people showed up Sunday morning and it was Brooke and I. And we're like, hi, family. And they're like, is this a church? So we're like, could you do both? So God did two extraordinary things during that season. That summer, we grew pretty significantly. So we're a little church of 60, and suddenly we're doubling in size and people are coming. And we started realizing, as the summer was coming to a close, that DNA that we had built to love one another so people would know we follow Jesus, to be in relationship and know each other deeply, to be able to really transfer this DNA of demonstrating God's passion, a passion for God and his passion for people. Because of the extensive growth that was taking place, we were losing some of that. So we made this crazy decision. We were like, okay, we got to pull all the advertising and we got to hide for the next couple of months so nobody comes, because we can't afford to grow this fast. And so we did. We pulled all of our advertising from the community wherever we had it. I remember calling the West Orange Times, and you know, in that like free church section where it just lists the churches in the community, I called them and I'm like, is there any chance you could pull us out of that? And the lady was trying to tell me that it's free. She's like, no, you don't pay for this. It's free, because she thought we were out of money. And I'm like, no. I just don't want us in the newspaper at all. When people are looking for churches, I want them to find the other churches, not us. And And so from that time all the way through Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter, we just kind of kept our heads down and hid so that we could do what? Reintegrate these people that had joined the story into the DNA. That became, which we couldn't have imagined then, a part of how we have lived ever since, that our commitment to being healthy and our commitment to being the church we were meant to be must always supersede our desire to see things grow. If growth diminishes health, then we fight for health, even if it means no growth. And that DNA started in this story. The other thing that happened there, again, God just demonstrating his story and faithfulness and guidance before we knew we needed it. So I'm preaching a morning service and an evening service, and I don't want our people to be bored and hear the same sermon twice. That would be ridiculous. And so I committed to preaching two different messages every Sunday. And because we were doing that, it afforded me the opportunity to really pray about, God, what do you want me to do in the morning? And what do you want me to do in the evening? And it was during that season, because we had two, that God laid on my heart the idea of starting in Genesis and traveling through the Bible. Because you could do that in the morning, and then in the evening, you could do something more sort of, you know, right here, what's happening in life. And our journey that has now been 17 years of traveling through the Bible began because of what God was doing in this building with two gatherings, two different sermons. And I look back now at one of the greatest gifts I am the recipient of, and I think we are collectively, is the journey we've been able to take through Scripture for the last 17 years. As much as we worked to keep growth down, unfortunately, it seemed like God had different plans. And so we began walking into this season of growth.
Up to this point, we were doing a lot in the local community. We also had begun serving in the global community. From the beginning, that was always a heart of ours to make an impact here, but also be able to go out into the larger world. And so in 2009, we had four global partners and two local partners. We had done a couple mission trips here and there. We'd gone to the Republic of Georgia and to the Ukraine. We were doing some church pastoral training. But we really felt as a church that we wanted to find a city, find a community somewhere else in the world where we could invest long-term, really see a city that didn't have a lot of help, didn't have a lot of nonprofits working, and jump in, send people, send resources for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, to be able to see sustainable, long-term, holistic change. And so in 2009, we took our team of our elders, wives, Renaud's parents, and we went to the city of Aksum, Ethiopia. And this was an amazing trip. We have been investing in Aksum ever since. That trip, we discovered that Aksum at the time was a city of about 40,000 people. There were about 1,000 street orphans. And very little medical care. At the time, there was no fresh water available to the everyday person. And so over the last 11 years, we have as a church been able to invest in the city of Aksum and the surrounding areas and care for vulnerable children and bring fresh water to that city. They now have an incredible medical center and hospital and university there. It's amazing growth has happened because of many things, but all partly because of our part in that story. We also, little did we know, that that trip would not just change our global missions philosophy, but would also deeply impact our local missions philosophy. We met a little girl. You'll see in the picture. That is Rahel. She became our daughter. So when we got back from that trip, we just could not get her out of our mind and praying and praying and praying and really felt the Lord leading us to adopt her. And that journey turned into adopting not only her, but her three older siblings, Berhanu, Fitzsimti, Mahari, and Rahel. The four of them came home on April 6, 2012. So it's been 11 years since their adoption. And that changed our family dramatically. It changed the life of this church dramatically. Many of you in this room's lives have been changed dramatically because you've stepped into the hard, amazing journey of caring for vulnerable children.
So that was a crazy space because it started awakening Brooke and I in our own personal journey of engaging with who would become our children, also the reality of vulnerable children in general, and this idea that they are children both locally and globally that do not have the same realities and access that our children have, and until that changes, we cannot sleep. And then as we began to dive into God's word, which we knew he cared about vulnerable children, but as we began to to dig both Old and New Testament and realize, man, this is a non-negotiable for someone who follows Jesus, that they are involved in caring for vulnerable children. God didn't make it one of the things. He made it a thing that his church does. And so we began to move as a church into this reality that said, if we are the church, we serve the community and we care for vulnerable children. And that began a journey for us. A journey that led to hundreds and hundreds of children being fostered in our midst and hundreds being adopted into forever homes and those families being made complete, including ours, and a commitment to finding out in the world where vulnerable children are vulnerable, why they're vulnerable, and doing something about it. So that then shaped the way we thought about missions. We started thinking about the idea that children become vulnerable often because of poverty and then war that leads to poverty. So we want to make sure we're working diligently to eliminate and alleviate poverty, because then that eliminates and alleviates vulnerability. For the children that come out of poverty and are vulnerable, they need homes. Their parents have died in wars or died because of poverty and disease, and they need homes or other realities. And so adoption and foster care become something we have to engage in. And then the children that do not get into families become vulnerable and they are exploited. So we must abolish human trafficking. And our story of Mosaic and how we think about mission and how we think about the church moving in and changing the world now fits into this paradigm of justice and mercy, of caring for vulnerable children, alleviating poverty, abolishing human trafficking, all of that that feels normal to us, that we're like, we just do that, don't we? We've always done that, haven't we? It's like, no, we haven't. That all emerged because of this incredible trip again that God took us on, and we thought we were just going to go check out a city and see if we could help. And here he has changed everything about who we are, while he also allows us to invest in that city and change everything. And it has been an incredible privilege to walk through all of that. And so we have since then seen things unfold as God has led us into this incredible journey.
While all this was going on in 2012, just 2 months before we brought our kids home to be part of our family, we also were seeing another dream realized. The reason we ended up actually choosing Orlando, we had looked at many, many cities, was because of a little company named Disney. We had this belief that if we could impact Disney and infiltrate Disney with the message of love and hope and freedom in Jesus Christ, that the ripple effects out of that would be worldwide. And that was why we felt called to come to Orlando. And so in February of 2012, we launched our first campus at Walt Disney World. And since that day, which is 11 years ago, we have seen thousands of young adults and older adults as well go through that campus. And what's truly amazing is that as they come and go through that campus, because there's a pretty much of a rotating door. There's so many college people that come through the college program, international students through the international program, and they are sent back home. Those people, they come, they encounter Jesus, they're discipled heavily, and then they go home. And it's like we're sending out missionaries all over the United States, all over the world through that campus. Truly bigger than we could have ever imagined when we've originally had the idea of starting work at Disney World.
So now we're in the general 2012 space. The Disney campus has launched, our children have come home, and from that point forward, God began to just do a work here that turned into a season of growth. And what was beautiful about that season is that by the time God allows our church to start growing in numbers and growing in resource, he had already spent now years and years and years solidifying our DNA, solidifying our heart, and making sure that we were bent on serving the community, changing the world, loving God, loving people, and serving the world. And we are now engaged in this fully. We are literally neck deep in it. And now the church starts growing. In 2012, I'm going to grab this because it's kind of staggering when you start thinking about it. 2011, 2012, we're in the old Oakland building, and we had a gathering at Saturday at 6 p.m., and we had a gathering at 9 a.m. on Sunday, and a gathering at 11 a.m. on Sunday, and a gathering at the Winter Garden campus. At the Walt Disney World campus. So four gatherings, right? At the height in 2016, here were our gatherings that we were doing because of the growth that had happened. We had a Thursday night 7 p.m. gathering and an 8:32 gathering at the Oakland campus. We had a 9 a.m. gathering, an 11 a.m. gathering, a 1:32 p.m. gathering, a 5 p.m. gathering at the Oakland campus. We had a Winter Garden gathering at the theater in Winter Garden, and we had the Walt Disney World gathering on Sunday nights. So we had 8 gatherings running every weekend because all these people had showed up, and we had these buildings and these spaces, and that's what we had to do. During this season, the Winter Garden Theater launched in 2013. We had the Walt Disney World campus launch in 2012. And then out of this growth, missions started growing as well. I think one of the most exciting things about the fact that God allowed us to start seeing numeric growth and then resource growth is that it afforded us as a collective to start dreaming bigger and bigger and bigger about what we could do in the world, not just with our money, but with the humans that are us, with our hands and our feet and our hearts and our commitment. And as we saw more and more people come to know Jesus, discipled into what it means to follow Jesus, we started seeing things grow. In 2009, we had 6 partners, 2 local and 4 global partners. We were a little church and we were funding them a little bit and sending a team here and there. By the time we got to 2019, we had 50 local partners and global partners combined, 50 in the world. And we were funding all of those and sending teams all over the world and engaging locally. Standing here today in 2023, we have 76 local and global partners. And wait for it, we move over $750,000 a year to those global partners alone out of this church. It's incredible what God has done. It has been amazing to watch the numeric growth translate into impact and change in the world, both locally and globally. We have participated in partnerships and training. We've done residencies, which we still do here, to train church planters. We work with Acts 29 and the cohort there to see churches planted locally and globally. We've launched a church planting network in Orlando to plant more churches in Orlando. We've seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people come to know Jesus and be baptized in this place. And through all of that, we have been able to give an incredible amount of resource and money away and send an incredible amount of talented and amazing people locally and globally as a force to be reckoned with as they move into the world and bring the kingdom of God to the world. In 2022, last year, we gave $1 million away out of this church to all of this. And isn't it an incredible thing that at some point, someone writes a $10 check that gives the clarity, courage, and perseverance to stay in the story. And then someone gives $1 million check to give us an opportunity when we were really just a fledgling something. And now, annually, year over year, as our budgets are set up now, we move $1 million to be given away, not even the stuff we do here. And you just look at that and say, man, to be part of a story that we get to be part of, where God is doing such incredible things. And that's not even to touch on the man hours that we participate in as a church, locally and globally. We are now at thousands and thousands of man hours here in the local community and the global community through you all and us engaging in serving the community. And those hours are given to our community for free. They're just our time, our energy, our hands given on behalf of Jesus. That's right. And so we have become the church that is now able to serve in extraordinary ways. And it has been a privilege to watch because this growth that's taken place, the greatest joy of this growth has been watching our ability to give more, to be sent more, to serve more, and to change the world more because God allows us to play in a story we have no business playing in, His story of redemption.
As much as this growth was amazing and incredible to see all that God was doing, the church size was doubling over and over again multiple times. The staff was doubling over and over again multiple times. And with that came a lot of challenges. Our family doubled in size, and I can testify that with that came a lot of challenges, a lot of beauty, a lot of challenges. And we were experiencing those here as a church as well, especially in the internal spaces. And so in 2020, the end of 2020, you know, that crazy year, remember that? A couple other things going on in the world as well. Hard time for churches, and whole world in that, for that matter, we decided as an elder team, I'm not on the elder team, but the elders decided that we would do an internal leadership audit. So we brought in an outside organization to come in and just find out, where are we doing really well? Where are we not doing well? How can we grow? How can we learn? How can we improve on our weaknesses? And so over the course of months, thousands of hundreds of hours of interviews, surveys, meetings, finding out how can we be a stronger, healthier, more stable church, prepared for what God has for us for the next 20 years of our future. And through that, we realized that there were some challenges. And so these last few years of Mosaic's life have been a time of pruning, a time of maturing. And we know from the book of John, John chapter 15, when it talks about Jesus, that I am the vine and you are the branches, that every tree, every branch that bears fruit needs to be pruned. Pruning is a hard season, but it's a necessary season for there to be better, stronger, more healthy growth for the long term. And that's exactly what we've gone through for these last few years. In James chapter 1, it says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance, and perseverance must finish its work so that you will be mature and complete, not lacking anything." And so we now here in 2023 have gone through a time of pruning and maturing and really believe that God is preparing for us this next season, this new season of fruitfulness for this local body.
So you guys heard that when we moved here, we had a five-week-old, right? And that five-week-old, Cullen, who is now my 20-year-old son, was 6 months old when we planted Mosaic Church officially that Easter. And it has been amazing over the years to watch him growing and realize that parenting a child and watching a church grow is very similar. When the church was 2 years old, she behaved kind of like Cullen was when he was 2 years old. When the church was 5 years old, it behaved kind of like Cullen did when he was 5 years old. When the church was 10 years old, it was the sweet years where everyone likes everyone and the church behaved like a 10-year-old. And then the church, entering its teenage years, behaved like a teenager to a certain extent, which is a part of any journey where God is growing an infant into an adult. And it turns out, as we look back over the last 20 years, that God has been faithfully taking this church and maturing us from childhood, infancy into childhood, into young adulthood, teenagehood, and now entering into the world of adulthood. And as I look at my son, Cullen, who's 20 years old right now, like I do many of my children, and he's standing at 20 years old, he's an adult, he has the frontal lobe back in his brain, he's thinking again, all of those beautiful things, teenage talk, don't worry about it. You kind of stand as a parent and you begin to wonder, God, if this is everything you've done in his life up to now, what on earth are you capable of doing now with him? And it's exactly how I feel about this church. If he has done all of this in our childhood and our infancy and our growing up and our maturing, what on earth does he do with us when we stand here now as a 20-year-old young church, but adult kind of-ish, ready to say, God, I'm ready. Where do you want to take us? And so we stand at this moment to kind of say, God, the last 20 years, you have been nothing but faithful in the midst of every up and every down. We know you will be for the next 20. We can't wait to see where you're going to take us. But the crazy part is that as much as it's exciting for us to think about what it will be like to be a part of this one story, this local body, we find out from Scripture, as we know, that God is at work not in one church, but in his church. And we are a small part of a giant story that God is unfolding. And when we realize what story we're really part of, this giant story, it stirs in me, and I hope in us, a sense that says, I want in. I want to be a part of this. I want to give myself to God's story, and I want to do it together with the others in my local expression. God is up to big things, and we are part of those big things, and he's been up to them for a long time.
Just last weekend, I had the privilege of leading a women's retreat. And so over the last few months, as I was preparing and planning and asking the Lord what he wanted me to teach at that retreat, the theme that God gave me was the theme of thirst. And so for the last few months, I have been studying the scriptures from Genesis to Revelation to see what the Bible has to say about thirst, water, desert experiences. Anyone ever been through a desert? And then the living water. And so in Genesis, actually the second verse of Genesis starts with, "And the Spirit of God hovered over the waters." In Genesis chapter 2, we see from the Garden of Eden that there's a river flowing out from the Garden of Eden. It separates into four different rivers, and it waters the earth all the way through until Revelation, which we're going to get to Revelation in a little bit. But we see this theme of water and running water. And then we see it through the Psalms, right? Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He's going to lead us beside still waters and restore our soul." In Isaiah 55, it starts, "Come, all who are thirsty, come to me and drink, and I will give you water without price, free water from God." In John chapter 7, Jesus himself, it's this incredible story where it's the Feast of Tabernacles, which is the seventh of the there's seven great feasts, and the Feast of Tabernacles is the seventh feast. It happens in the time of October. It's harvest time, and the Jewish men would make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem for this feast. They would build these little booths, so it's also known as the Feast of Booths, and they would build these little booths, and they would live in these little tents, huts, remembering the time, hearkening back to the time of when God led them through the wilderness and provided for them and was faithful to them through all of those years. And on the last day of this feast, the seventh day, the eighth day, the great day, we know from John chapter 7 that Jesus stands up and he cries out. But what's fascinating about this is that since the Lord instituted this festival, this feast, back in the Old Testament, that the priests had added on some additional things to make this more ceremonial, more exciting. And one of the ceremonies they added on was called the water pouring ceremony. So the priests on the last day would stand up and they'd pour out these big jugs of water, going back to prophecies that happened in Ezekiel and Joel about how the Lord is going to pour out his water and refresh his people, and that living streams of water will flow out from his people. And Jesus stands up, and it is believed from Bible scholars that he stood up at this point in the ceremony when the priest would have been pouring out that water. And he stands up and he says, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water." So Jesus becomes that living water, right? We heard about it last week from Brady. He gives us the Spirit of God. And then we, the church, out of us flows living water. And we can then refresh others. We can refresh our community, our families, our workplaces, our world. It's an incredible fulfillment of the Feast of Tabernacles that Jesus says, "I am that living water."
So while Brooke is... While Brooke is studying all of this to teach at this retreat, our teaching team is going through the series that we're in of God residing with us and residing in different ways progressively. And when we get to the part of the church, we're studying what it means that God resides in us, the church. So we know that he resides in me and you by his Spirit. Brady covered that last week, closer than our breath, transforming us. But he also says that we are being built into a house, all part of the stones of this house, that this is his new temple. So we start studying and we discover that this river flows out of Eden, as Brooke said in Genesis chapter 2, and it represents out of God flowing life and the river of life. Then in Ezekiel chapter 11, God departs from the temple. The temple that he resided in, he departs from it. His glory departs. And the people go into exile, and it's a terrible time. And in Ezekiel 47, God brings Ezekiel back to the temple door in a vision. And he shows him something. Out of the temple, if you read Ezekiel 47, it's incredible. He sees this vision of a river flowing out of the temple. First, it starts trickling out. Then it gets bigger and bigger, and he follows the river. And it starts getting knee deep, and then it starts getting waist deep. And before you know it, it's just so deep. And then it overflows the banks of what it was running. And then Ezekiel starts describing this vision of this river bringing life wherever it went, teeming life within the water. And then as it overflows the banks, fruit trees growing up everywhere, just life wherever it goes. And God gives Ezekiel a vision of a new and better temple that is going to come that is not the temple he departed from. Jesus, in John chapter 7 that Brooke referred to, he gets up and he says this, and he says what? "Come to me, for I am the living water," right? So now where is this river coming from now? where God resides in flesh, in Jesus. But then he says this crazy thing. He says, when you come to me and you drink from the living water, what am I going to do? Out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. Out of whose heart? The person who comes to Jesus. So this river now flows out of this person who's come to Jesus. And this is what it says in the next verse. Now this he said about the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were to receive, for as yet the Spirit had not been given because Jesus was not yet glorified. So Jesus in John 7 is saying, you're going to come to me and be the recipients of this living water. And then what's going to happen to you? The Spirit of God, who's going to be in you collectively, is going to flow through you, and you are going to be a temple that I reside in, and out of my temple will flow the living water, the river. And what will we water?
The earth.
The earth. We will go with him as we take back the territory that belongs to him. And then, this is insane. Revelation 21, we've talked about that. We will next week again. Revelation 22, the last chapter in the entire Bible. Verse 1, then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city. Also on either side of the river, the tree of life with the 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit each month. Wow! And so here we stand. We are one church with 20 years of history and an unimaginable amount of God's faithfulness. Can you imagine how faithful he's been to his church over thousands of years if he's been this faithful to this little church in this moment? And yet, he invites us to be a people as a church to say, we can be part of being the river of life that flows into the four corners of the earth and brings life where there is death, light where there is darkness, and freedom where there is bondage. This is what we get to be part of. And each of you, along with me, gets to be part of this story by being part of one little church that's part of many churches that's part of his temple. And so what it affords us to do now is to ask this question, doesn't it? God, as a church, here we are, do with us as you see fit. We want to be as intentional as we've been for the last 20 years on being the church you've called us to be, and work at it every day, demonstrating our passion for God and his passion for people, learning to love each other well, serving at the cost of surviving, and getting out there and changing the world. And each one of you and I get to ask this question. God, I don't want to be a spectator. I don't want to be a sideliner. I don't want to show up and get. I want to show up and be part of. I want to participate in your story by participating in a local expression of your global church so that we together can participate in the global expression of your global church so we can be the temple of God. When you walked into this place, you got a rock and you might have thought to yourself, what on earth do I have a stone for? It looked something like this. In the scriptures, we are described in the letters Peter wrote as a house being built up for God to reside in, the church, and that we are the stones within that. What I want you to do and to consider and to think about today is this. If you are here and you know Jesus and you are part of this local expression of the church, I want you to ask yourself, do I want in on this fully? Maybe you already are. So this is an easy one for you. Already am. I'm just kind of putting a tangible reality down for myself. This isn't for us. This is for you. And maybe you're not. Maybe you're like, I want to be more intentional, more in, invest more. I want to experience what Penny or that family experienced, or what those who have painted and taken care of things and cooked burgers and watched kids and moved chairs and parked cars and all these people that have done things to be part of the story. I want, in 20 years, when we tell these stories, I want to be able to go, I was part of that. If that's you and you're like, I want in on that, I want to learn to be intentional, then we want you to do something special with these rocks to create that intentional and tangible thing.
So in the back of your chair, there should be a Sharpie. We want you to write your initials on your rock. And if this church is your home, if you consider this church to be your church family and you say, yes, I want to be involved, this is my home, I'm going to be involved, then you're going to take this rock, and on your way out, there's going to be large blue bins, and we'd like you to place your block in the blue bin, and we are going to create an Ebenezer of sorts. We'll put something together. We're not exactly sure yet. We're still coming up with ideas for that. That will be on display where you'll get to see tangibly when you come to church. This is my home. I'm part of it. I'm one of the stones. I'm one of those living stones that we hear about in the scriptures that Renaud told us about. And just to remember God's faithfulness, that he would use us as part of his grand story for redemption. If you are not a part of this church and you want to be, put your name on the rock, stick it in the box. But if you're part of another church, maybe you're visiting for today, you're just checking out, and you're really involved somewhere else, that's awesome. We love that. We are one big church, universal church. So take your rock home with you. Place it somewhere where you'll see it, maybe on your desk or in your kitchen, on a little windowsill, so that when you see it, you are reminded of the fact that you play an important part. That whatever church you're part of, they need you. They need you to be involved, to give your talent, your time, your skills, your resources to build this great universal church of God.
So, as you guys step into that, if you are part of a community group here at Mosaic, this week in community groups, you will be going through a little resource that helps you begin to tangibly pray about what that would look like for you. It's just a way of helping you say, great, I've had this little moment of a rock and I want in, but what does that actually mean? And it's going to give you some tools to be able to pray together. If you're not in a community group, first of all, you should be. But if you are not, that same resource will be available on our website just for your use to grab and just have something tangible to pray through about. Asking God, God, how do you want me to take what is mine, my talents, my gifts, my time, my energy, my hands, my feet, my resources, and become more intentional in investing it in your story and not just in mine? We hope that resource is helpful for you as you do that. We now want to leave this place, especially as we approach Easter this next weekend, and we want to take the faithfulness of God that has been displayed before us, and we want to shout from the rooftops and the mountains, you are faithful, and we're going to tell everyone. That's what we want to do. So church, as we head out here and we throw our rocks in and we engage in the journey of being a part of this story, let us also be a people that, stirred by God's faithfulness, would be a people shouting to the world, first to each other and then to the world, of God's extraordinary faithfulness to us, because that is what this story is about. We're going to do that together as we declare his faithfulness, but I'm going to ask Brooke to pray for us as we close out our time, and then we will worship together.
Oh, great God, we are just stand here today in awe of you and your incredible story that you work when we see it and when we don't. You are at work, God. So we just thank you, we praise you, we worship you this morning. God, thank you that you invite us into your story, that you pour into us your living water, and then out of us flows rivers of living water that we can then refresh others. God, would you today just pour yourself out on this church, on churches all across our city, all across our world, that we might be a refreshment to the world around us, God, bringing light, life, freedom to those who don't know you. God, we love you. We are so thankful. We stand in awe of you today. We pray all of these things in Jesus' name.